Hey up, Shane. It's Shandy Andy here from Unguarded Trevor. Thank you so much for that. I'm already smiling and chuckling away to myself on this Saturday morning from that rare mistake that you've made in your podcast. I've already had Spencer ribbing me about it. But no, mate, it really has put me in a good frame of mind for today. Top episode, by the way. Back on the serious side of things, and I'll drop you some messages about that, because I think you have hit the nail on the head as normal with how you've covered it and how it is a spectrum of things and there's no right and wrong. So well done, Shay. I'll drop you some messages later on that. If you say the real life ends up your day, midlife is the best time to start a new role-playing phase. And you need a rescue. Chase coming at you with a rescue. A role-play rescue. Chase gonna help my friend. Let's sit down the game again. Rescue.
My name is Che Webster, and this is Roleplay Rescue. Hello, rescuers. It's another episode of Roleplay Rescue, and I just wanted to say thank you for coming along to listen. This one's going to be, off the cuff, completely unscripted and completely random. What I've done is I've saved up a few really key kind of community messages that have come in to me, and I'm going to respond to them. But these aren't your usual kind of, you know, quick call and response. There are several calls here that are really quite important and which I felt needed a more extended response. And so I think I'm going to string three or four of these together and make it an episode. So here we are. This is Season 5, Episode 14, Structure, Modules, and Finding a Group.
Rescue! Che, Andy here again. The other thing that I meant to ask you about or talk about is your use of the word structures. Because every time you use it, I, for a little while, I don't understand what you mean by it. And then you give an example, and then it becomes clear. But it still doesn't stick in my head. So you use it to describe different adventure, types, like dungeon crawls or hex crawls or, you know, whatever, plot-based or point crawls. I guess adventure paths would also fit into that or whatever. Now, I can kind of see on one level how things might be seen as structures, but on another hand, it seems a little bit counterintuitive.
And so it begins. Andy Goodman from Expedition to the Grizzly Peaks there. And this one goes back a few weeks. Andy actually left a full 5-minute message, sequence of 5 1-minute clips on Anchor, and he could have stopped there and I'd have been able to answer it, but he didn't, and he rambled on for another 4 minutes. Now, there's a part of me that feels like this 4 minutes, he kind of ends up back where he started and he didn't need to do it, but there were some key insights. So I'm going to play the next 4 minutes of Andy's ramble, and then we're going to talk about what I mean by the term game structure. Take it away, Andy.
Now, I am, as you must be aware by now, a horrible pedant. But language for me is very critical, because it helps to clarify and, embrace people coming into the hobby, which is, I guess, what you and myself as well are both very concerned about. And I feel that language can be a way of excluding people, because it is not common or shared in a lot of cases, and especially technical language. And there's a lot of this that goes on in the gaming world. And I think it's something that we should be trying to eradicate as much as possible, make language simpler, clearer, more understandable to people that don't have the reference points. Not that this is a criticism in any way, please realise that. And I also don't think it's ever possible to come to a agreement, if you like, especially in a loosely connected and unaffiliated groups of people like gamers. G- games writers, games masters, and so on. But I think there's something that we can all do on an individual level, and I try and do this, I think, quite a bit myself, especially when I'm talking to new players. I like to put things in as colloquial and simple terms as possible. So getting back to your structures word, I feel that this doesn't quite describe what you're trying to describe, because for me, the structure is like this kind of armature on top of a machine, if you like. Let's say your mechanics or your mechanisms are the engine that drives the machine, that drives the game forward, that provides the motive power, turns the gears, does all of that kind of dirty business under the hood. Your structure is the thing that gives it a shape, that kind of sits on top of that. And I feel, for me, that's really more like the general kind of, let's say, the type of game and the way that it plays at the table. Whereas what you're describing is more like how do you actually have, how does it, this is a tricky one, how does the story play out? And I know you don't like story, but, you know, what is the nuance? What is the differentiator between, you know, using the same set of rules, the same mechanics, the same structure, the same sort of fundamental, you know, laws of the universe that the game has, but playing a very different style of game, you know, playing a dungeon crawl or a wilderness adventure or running a story path? Because actually, you can do any of them in any game mechanic with any game structure, I believe. They aren't binary. They aren't exclusive to each other. So what word would be better? I don't know. It's the problem. I don't know a better word. So this whole 4 minutes of rambling actually ends up with no answer. And for that, I'm profoundly sorry.
Thank you, Andy. And there's absolutely no need for you to feel sorry. That's great. In fact, it gives me a great vehicle for a chunk of an episode, and I'm going to dig into that. But first, I'm just going to replay the original bit of the question right back 5 minutes ago. So here's what Andy originally asked, and then here's my answer.
Che, Andy here again. The other thing that I meant to ask you about or talk about is your use of the word structures. Because every time you use it, for a little while, I don't understand what you mean by it. And then you give an example, and then it becomes clear, but it still doesn't stick in my head. So you use it to describe different adventure, I guess, types, like dungeon crawls or hex crawls or you know, whatever, plot-based or point crawls. I guess adventure paths would also fit into that or whatever. Now, I can kind of see on one level how things might be seen as structures, but on another hand, it seems a little bit counterintuitive.
Okay, so game structures. What do I mean? Well, first thing you have to understand is that it's not my term, okay? So I'm just going to refer you to the Alexandrian. The Alexandrian.net is a blog, and Justin Alexander is the creator of that blog, and back in April 2nd, 2012, he posted up an article called Game Structures, which has proven hugely influential to the way I think about role-playing games. I think it's best if I actually just read you an excerpt from that article. So here goes. Quote, "One of the most overlooked aspects in the design and play of traditional role-playing games is the underlying game structure, or, to put it another way, there are two questions which every game designer and GM must ask themselves. One, what do the characters do? And two, how do the players do it? These questions might seem deceptively simple, but the answers are complex, and getting the right answers is absolutely critical to having a successful gaming session. Some of you may already be challenging this. How difficult can it be? The players tell me what their characters are doing, and then we resolve it. What could be easier? To demonstrate the oversight taking place here, let me give you a quick example of play. Player, I want to explore the dungeon. GM, Okay, make a dungeoneering check. Player, I succeed. GM, okay, you kill a tribe of goblins and emerge with 546 GP in loot. Is there anything wrong with that? Not necessarily, but it's certainly a very different game structure than the traditional Dungeons & Dragons dungeon crawl. And of course, that example already assumes that the PCs are fantasy heroes who do things like dungeon crawling. Given the exact same setting and the exact same game system, they could just as easily be monarchs, dragons, farmers, magical researchers, planar travellers, gods, military masterminds, or any of a dozen other things for whom these dungeon crawling game structures are irrelevant. End quote. Right, all well and good, I hope. So hopefully we've defined the term a little bit and got you starting to think. And I've obviously referred you to my source, which is the Alexandrian. Right, I need to sort of go into a bit more detail. So Andy, I know that you play a lot of Call of Cthulhu. I know that because I listened to your fantastic podcast, Expedition to the Grizzly Peaks. And the thing is that Call of Cthulhu has a specific game structure that's kind of baked into the game. That game structure is the mystery. Essentially, Call of Cthulhu games are all about a mystery. And the default question, so those two default questions, if you like, what do the characters do and how do the players do it? Well, what do the characters do? They investigate mysteries. And how do the players do it? They look for clues. And that is functionally different to what you're doing in a game of Dungeons & Dragons that's set in a dungeon. Because there, what do the characters do? They look for treasure. And how do the players do it? Well, they pick a direction in the dungeon. They decide whether they're going left or right, and they continue to explore. If we're playing a hex crawl, where we are essentially on a map, then what do the characters do? Well, they explore the map. They explore the region of territory that you're in. And how do the players do it? Well, again, they pick a direction. They pick a hex face if it's a player-facing hex map, and they go in that direction. And if it's not a player-facing map, or if it's a map that doesn't have a hex grid over it, then essentially they pick a direction, north, south, east, west, whatever, or they follow a road, or they follow the river, or whatever. But essentially the default things that they are doing are baked in the structure. Now, I hope you'll agree with me that what's going on in that Cthulhu mystery game is quite different to what's going on in the dungeon or on a hex. But actually, the game rules could be entirely the same. So if we take Call of Cthulhu, that's the basic role-playing game system. And I could play basic role-playing in a dungeon by using the D100 percentile game rules to adjudicate the things that are happening. But actually, I'm using the dungeon crawl game structure. And I could do a hex map. I can use the D100 basic role-playing rules to adjudicate stuff that's going on the hex crawl. And yet, what the players are doing, what the characters are achieving, and how the players are going about doing it, to be more precise, those things are very, very different. Now, the Alexandrian goes on deeper and further. So he makes a comparison between board and card games and role-playing games, and he makes the statement, and I'll quote him here. The reason game structures become an issue for us is because role-playing games are functionally open-ended. There is an expectation, and a reasonable one, that the players should be able to say, I want my character to do X, and then we'll be able to figure out if A, they're successful, and B, what happens as a result. In role-playing games, what we should consider is the hypothetical scenario in which you drop a group of PCs into a random street, and you take the same group of PCs and you drop them into a random room in a dungeon. Why does one group say, I head through the north door, while the other group says, I go looking for the local police station? Why doesn't the guy in the dungeon say, I go looking for the treasure, and the guy on the street corner say, I take the street on the left? Partly that's a matter of each group of characters having a different set of immediate goals, but it has a lot more to do with the habits that have been casually ingrained into us through years of playing RPGs. End quote. Now, what I really believe is true is that essentially we can switch between different structures in a role-playing game depending on our needs. But I don't think we can do that if we're not conscious of them. And therefore, I personally find the term game structure really, really helpful for making it clear that there is a difference between the rules of a game and how we adjudicate the decisions that the players are making, the setting or the world of the game, and how the game is being played. Essentially, how we answer the question, what do the characters do, and how do the players do it? Does that make any sense? I really hope it does.
Hey Shay, it's Joe Richter, longtime listener, long elapsed caller. I'm calling in regards to your discussion about running pre-written, pre-programmed adventures off the cuff as opposed to having to do a lot of prep to get them to the table. And I touch on this to a call in I made to Barney on Loco Ludus, but that hasn't come out yet, so this might take a couple messages. But my thesis is that modules, pre-written adventures demand lots of prep. I don't think it's possible to run a good game, an efficient game, an effective game, running a module off the cuff without reading it. I do have some experience with that, and I'll touch on that in my next message. So I was playing in a pre-written campaign, and it doesn't matter what system it is, because my thesis is system agnostic. I think it's true of all systems. But we were playing in a long-running campaign where the DM would read ahead, prep ahead, and the game was fantastic. It was so much fun. Everyone at the table was having a blast. The game was snappy. It moved along. The adventure was high. The characters were well-rounded. There were not long pauses. It was fantastic. Then the DM's schedule at work got changed, and so he could no longer read ahead, or at least that's what he claimed. And I will talk about how that went. So when the DM's schedule at work got changed, like I said, he stopped reading ahead, and he would try and just spend an hour or so before the game and then read along at the table. And that ruined the game. The group ended up breaking up. It was terrible. It was slow moving. The characters didn't make any sense because he didn't know what their backgrounds or their motivations were. It was just bad. And the difference between prepping a pre-written adventure or trying to run it on the fly was night and day and not even comparable. And I think that holds true. I don't think it's possible to run a good game, a good pre-written game, without a good solid amount of prep. And that's my thesis. And until we talk again, peace out.
Word up, Joe. Joe Richter from Hindsightless Podcast there. What a brilliant call in, and so timely. Goes so nicely with the one before, I think. So yeah, broadly speaking, Joe, I'm going to agree with you. I would suggest, and my experience tells me this too, that running a pre-written module without much prep is nearly impossible, and without that kind of being a really clunky experience. But, and there is a big but here, big caveat, because I think it depends a bit on the module. So what do we mean by a module? Well, if we mean like a kind of extended adventure, which actually has a kind of whole pre-plotted kind of series of events and other such things, then yeah, you got no chance if you haven't read it and you don't understand the sequence of things. So for me, things like really big modules, big adventures, sort of mini campaigns or actual campaigns and stuff like that, they are the stuff which you need to pour in the hours. And I kind of, going back to Andy Goodman, he's put in a couple of hundred hours getting ready to play Mars of Nyarlathotep. I never pronounced that and I still butchered it. But anyway, yeah, 200 hours or something into getting ready over a series of months. I am really wrestling and struggling to get a game of Traveller using the High and Dry module, which is, I don't know, maybe it's 30, 40 pages, something like that. And again, it's taking me a heck of a lot longer than it does to prep for my Dungeons of Thal dungeon crawl game. And, you know, there's so much to read. You've got to read it, you've got to process it, you've got to organize it. Now, coming back to kind of this whole mention of game structure, it depends a little bit on the game structure. If it's a one structure system and that structure is simple, like a dungeon crawl, and it's not too huge, I think it is possible to prep ahead of the game. So, for example, when I ran a mega dungeon, just using dungeon crawl strategy, I'm thinking about the Dungeons of Thracia using BX, I was able to read a little bit ahead in the dungeon and present that, and it kind of worked just fine. I think it would have been massively advantageous for me to read the whole thing, but I just didn't have the time. And I know what? I don't think the kids really noticed. If it's a one-page dungeon, I don't think that anyone's really going to notice. You can probably run that pretty much off the, on the fly, very minimal prep. It really depends on what you're running. If it's a mystery, if it's anything that requires some kind of narrative depth, you know, that has a pre-planned structure, if it's anything like nodal based or anything like that, it probably requires more prep. And I'm completely with you, Joe. But if it's a simple thing, or if it's a bit of a sandbox, you know, the hex crawly type sandbox game, and the guys are moving from place to place, the game structure itself allows you to not have to prep so much. So for example, in the dungeon crawl, you know they're just going to keep exploring, and you just got to know, be a few rooms ahead of them every time. It's very easy to prep light. If it's a hex crawl, essentially they're going to be moving from point A where you start them to wherever they want to go, or they're exploring the map. You don't know where they're going to go, so you've got to be improvising more on the fly. The information has to be looser and lighter. And essentially, it is possible again to run that on the fly with random monster encounters and other such things going on. When I try to run Doug Cole's fantastic stuff, you know, set in his wonderful setting, Vikings setting, I just couldn't do it because I didn't have the time to prep it properly and read the whole adventure. And I was butchering it, and I just abandoned it, and we went back to Thal. So I agree. I think it's a brilliant phone-in, brilliant call-in, absolutely amazing thesis. But I do think I slightly disagree. But hey, it wouldn't be a show if we weren't discussing this stuff, would there? So Joe, keep it up, man. And yeah, game on.
Hi, Jay. Roy here again from Chaos's Limb. I have still been going through your series one of podcasts, and I wanted to remark on episode 103. One of your call-ins was talking about how sometimes it's hard to find players that want to play something other than 5e. And I definitely sympathize with him. Just to give you an idea of some of the things I tried. So I first tried the online methods. Like I went to RPG Table Finder, signed up there. I also downloaded the Game4 app and signed up there, saying I had some open spots. I connected to all the meetup groups that I could find that were RPG related. And then ultimately, I even went around to the game shops and just posted up a poster asking for players. And I got in. There was a meetup group that was meeting locally that was doing some RPG tabletop role-playing. They were mainly doing 5e. I would kind of just run one-shots of non-5e stuff for people who would show up occasionally. It was really hard to get a long-term campaign going. It was a lot of one-shots that I was running at that time. At the same time, there were probably 10 people at two other tables that were involved in long-term 5e campaigns. So, yeah, although in theory it seems like in this day and age it would seem easy to find others of like interest, it's not always that easy. And I don't live in a very remote place. I live in the Bay Area, just east of San Francisco, so we've got a large population base around here. Now, I have to say, I did probably limit myself in at least a couple of ways. One was that I really wanted to play a face-to-face group. Now, I did sign up for Roll20, and I did put out there that I was willing to run some stuff, but I think at that point I was more interested in Dungeon World, so I don't know if OSR would necessarily have the same lack of interest as I found. But my preference is to do some face-to-face gaming. I will say though, I did eventually have some luck with the meetup group that I was running one shots at. Eventually, some people came in that were interested in OSR gaming, and we've been doing some longer term campaign stuff since then.
Roy Lorenko there from Chaos's Limb. Fantastic call in. Thank you so much. It's really great to have you listening back through the back catalogue. And of course, referring to season one, episode 3, which is, well, an age ago, though. It's actually only a little over a year and a half, maybe ago, or a year and a quarter. But thank you, Roy. Really good to hear you. And nice to hear your tale as well. And it's a familiar tale to listeners of this show. And I kind of think, in a way, it's very timely that you bring this up, because it's easy for me to forget that people probably aren't listening back through the back catalogue. I kind of assumed when I started podcasting that people would sort of probably start at the beginning and work forward. But it turns out what people do is they listen to an episode and then they kind of listen forward from that point. And very rarely do people, it seems, necessarily go back through your back catalogue. So you wouldn't have yet got to Series 1, Episode 7, where I return to the call-in you're referring to. And if I remember correctly, it's a call-in from the fantastic Michael Bowers. And he was quite frustrated. I did a cursory response in a follow-up episode. And then in episode 107, I came back with some serious kind of thoughts on it. And it's a fully extended thing. But I just kind of wanted to recap that. So for anyone listening, the key tips that I originally offered were, first of all, something Roy was doing there, offering to GM. And I kind of think set up a one-off game, short and simple, no real commitment. That's kind of really important. The critical thing, though, was I think setting up a table, if you're going to do something long-term, as an open table. And what I mean by that is a table where people can drop in and out week by week, session by session, whatever it is you run it as, without there being any ongoing long-term commitment. Now, that requires a lot of a kind of careful setup, I suppose, more precisely. You need easy access game system, and you need there to be a premise that allows for a change in personnel every single session. And you also need a really fast character generation process, or lots and lots of pre-gens, one of the two. And so the Mega Dungeon is obviously the classic kind of easy drop in and out game. That's what I'm doing with Thal, and it has transformed my gaming in the last, 6 months or so. I absolutely think you need an open table. In terms of going from there, I suggested an online game as another route into finding gamers. And obviously, Roy, you limited yourself in that regard, and I think that's perfectly reasonable to do. I personally prefer face-to-face too, but just don't forget you can go online. So those were my three tips. Offer to GM, make it an open table, and don't, be open to going online, although that's very optional. But here we are. So what else could people go delving on? Well, as like I said, Series 1, Episode 7, How to Get People to Play Your Game. I think it would be worth diving back through Series 1 anyway. And then on Season 2, when you get there, you're going to find Episode 1 is Ray Otis asking again about how do we fit it into our lives, how do we make room for it in our lives, and perhaps giving strategies for helping other people get it into their lives again. And that's at the heart of what I'm trying to do here on Roleplay Rescue. But I'm blithering. Just want to say thank you again, Roy, for calling in. And what a fantastic nudge back into the back catalogue. Go on, you know you want to. Roy's loving it, look. And that's about all I've got time for. It's also what I set out to share with you. So I guess that's the end of another episode. Massive thank you to Andy Goodman, and also to Joe Richter and Roy Lorenko. Thanks so much for calling in, guys. Really, really great to hear from you. Well, thanks also to Shandy Andy at the top of the show. I really, really hope that you enjoy this episode. Guys, thank you, and I hope the replies make sense. Thank you once again to the Roleplay Rescue patrons who support the show through their generosity on Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/RPG Rescue. I've recently rejigged the reward levels, so you get a little bit more for your money these days. I'm very self-conscious about the money, it has to be said. I'm not in it for that. I'm trying to build a community. I'm trying to get people back to the hobby. But it is lovely that people chuck money in the old hat there and say thank you and encourage me on in that way. if you're interested, from Dungeon Master's Diary number 20, just gone this week, I pulled an excerpt. And there's a 10-minute or so rant that I did on player agency, which may be relevant to what we've been talking about today. You want to listen to that. That's freely available from Monday on the Patreon for anyone who's not a patron. If you're already a patron, you've had access to that for a week. But it's a little bit of bonus stuff that I'm starting to do. There are now three, I think, up there, and they are... You know, I'm not going to put them on Anchor because I don't want to clutter up the feed, but they are there for those who want to get those little asides from me. So that's that. Right. Finishing up then, thank you to you, the listener. You took a little time out of your day today to listen, and I massively appreciate that. I hope that I fulfilled my core mission of encouraging you all to regularly play imaginative games, and I hope that I'm encouraging you to play them in a way that suits you personally better. My name is Che Webster. This is Roleplay Rescue. I'll see you again on the flip side. Game on.